All right, welcome everyone. Just looking for the monitor to get started. Okay. Welcome. Welcome to our special meeting today. We have a special meeting and a closed session at the end of our special meeting. It's Thursday, November 29, 2018. Our meeting is starting at 4:30, located here at the Vets Hall. And for the record, we do have a quorum. All members of council are present, and we'll call the meeting to order. This is a special meeting, so we only have one public comment period at the beginning of the meeting for the entire agenda. I know I have some speaker slips with that, and just to let everybody know. And first up, we have John Weiss for public comment. Do we have a microphone on the podium, AGP? Check it again, John.
John Weiss.
Not yet. Testing.
Testing. Okay, I'm sorry, John, the 3 minutes is up.
Well, it would be fitting. I probably don't have anything much to say anyway. Right.
How's the microphone? Are we on?
Hello?
Okay, there we go. All right, John.
John Weiss.
All right, welcome.
Resident, business owner, former candidate for mayor. I want to begin by thanking all my supporters. It's an amazing process, so I want to really thank all of them. And
I'm honored to run and congratulate Tom Henning.
Hello. It's rather directional. My reason for being here is to applaud, as I understand it, one item on your agenda, which is to count the 218 protest votes, all of them, and hopefully we can bring some closure to that particular activity, and hopefully we can come together and work together. And I basically want to really offer my support for that. And I hope you have a great meeting. Thank you.
Thank you, John. Next up, Aaron Oakes.
Good evening, members of the council and staff. My name is Aaron Oakes of Save Morro Bay, and tonight I would like to talk about item 5 on the agenda. So it is a step in the right direction to count and verify the votes, but I believe they should be validated as well pursuant to Article 6 of the California Constitution. And I believe this because it comes across as an empty gesture, just to simply count and verify by itself. If there is a significant amount of protest, then there has to be that additional verification process naturally. You know, you can't have it both ways. And the New Times agrees with me and believes it should be a full-throated, full count of the votes. And a lot of people are watching this process, and I appreciate the fact that the city is reconsidering that as part of a healing process. But I also believe we need to follow the law and be thorough. And I think that's the only way we can move forward as a community, and that's to ensure that every voice is heard, that every voice matters in this process. And I wanted to thank the council for and staff specifically for making the recommendation to exclude the date requirement, because Save Morro Bay, we did a lot of research, and we found that the date requirement is not constitutionally protected. And there's no case law, there's no foundation, and it demonstrated to me that by going through that process back on September 11th, that the counting process wasn't done correctly. Pursuant to Resolution 4418, what should have been done is have the city clerk, in accordance to Section 9 specifically of Resolution 4418, to make that final say on the count. But instead, the council made their decision based on what one local resident said about the 1,000 ballots, and they should have been counted at the beginning. So, you know, that got me a little concerned, the fact that your council approved that $67 million contract with Black & Veatch after that vote wasn't counted. So the process was kind of, you guys did it in the wrong order. And I firmly believe that we need to be in the correct order from this point forward. And I think doing a full count is something that I highly recommend, and Save More Obey highly recommends as well. Thank you for your time. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Aaron. Next up, Carol Truesdale. I almost said Caroline Copps, Carol Truesdale. Thanks, Carol.
Good evening, Council and Mayor. My name is Carol Truesdale. I want to invite all of you to join the Caroline Copps Christmas Trolley Parade. North Morro Bay is Monday, December 10th. Central Morro Bay is Tuesday, December 11th, and South Morro Bay is Wednesday, December 12th. So if you need, the seats are filling up very rapidly, and if you want to attend, give me a call at 805-459-9900 for any type of reservations. Now, can I go back into what I was talking
Sure.
about, General?
Yeah.
Okay. In Tuscany, there's a building close to the city government offices with a Gothic-type door, and it's referred to Porta della Carta, or paper door, whereby the citizens stand at this door and wait for their turn to speak inside the chambers their issues with their own council and staff, and hope beyond hope their time and effort make a difference to this city. Porta della Carta, that metaphor resonates in many ways. Doors you can push through, doors that are impervious, doors impossible to lock, transparent doors, doors between two states of being, or doors you thought were closed to you, doors that are not doors. Citizens of Morro Bay, myself included, have stood outside council doors with research papers asking to be heard and acknowledged as it pertains to affordability of a sewer plant that we cannot afford or really need, $126 million plus, and just approved an addendum to the contract for another $1.6 million, an addendum to an existing contract of this amount of money, and it does not affect the $126 million price tag, question mark. It's a difficult for me to comprehend and digest. I love Chairman Teff's comment, bless his soul, about creeping up and out of the mitigation measures to build beyond our needs. This WRF project is not good for the city and citizens of Morro Bay. Porta della Carta, transparent door, to what is financially not feasible, for we the people voted this council in to watch over our citizens' finances and city. We continue to knock at this transparent door, and maybe one day the door will open and we'll finally be heard and acknowledged for our efforts of keeping Morro Bay affordable for everyone. Thank you for listening, and I wish everybody a very happy holiday season. Thank you.
Thanks, Carol. Next up, Barbara Doerr.
Good evening, all, and congratulations, John. First and foremost, I support... Oh, I'm speaking on item number four, the CBA with Castle. First and foremost, I support sustainable energy and recognize that offshore wind energy must be a part of our future. I have also read about Ella Weinstein and her past projects and acknowledge she is one of the leaders in renewable energy. Offshore wind energy is a new developing technology. I read a lot of websites. There are many unknowns, especially ocean impacts. If the Castle Trident proposed floating wind energy project were in existence today, it would be the largest facility in the world. This is a big deal. Instead of approving the agreement, I suggest that the city support the technology, the importance and necessity of offshore wind energy to meet California energy goals, the potential economic benefits to Morro Bay and Slo County, and acknowledge Trident's and now Castle's willingness to reach out to the city, residents, and some organizations. But don't sell our civic soul for $250,000. If another bidder for the Boehm lease has a superior project, stay free to support it. I oppose the community benefits agreement. If you are to approve it, I suggest you make changes to the CBA. Suggested changes are detailed in an email and a copy I'll leave. However, I do have a summary. On Section 1, Community Communications, greater involvement of the City Council in approval process rather than just city staff, inclusion of outside non-Castle experts, especially regarding the environment, required posting of project actions on the website. That should be a shall, not a may. Requiring, cable casting of all meetings. And if you have to, take $25,000 from the $250 to put it for true transparency and your goal of public information. Local economic development activities. Greater emphasis on just Morro Bay residents, not just all local jobs. Direct benefit to Morro Bay schools and loans, not just local schools. Promote use of long-term housing accommodations and motel hotels, not Airbnb. Emphasis on promoting Morro Bay business suppliers, not just locally. Support our Morro Bay businesses. Promote green solutions in Morro Bay, not just locally. These are things that are agreed to by Castle. First, and number 7, Section 7 and 10, eliminate exclusivity of CBA so city may support a superior wind energy project if necessary. And make the Section 10 miscellaneous, make the CBA an outfall lease not transferable. This is not a real estate deal where Castle gets the lease, and then they can sell it to whomever they want, to their subsidiaries and those who are implementing it, fine. Thank you. It's ours. Keep it and protect our ocean.
Thanks, Barbara. Okay, with that, I don't have any more speakers for this item. Are you going to come up during the item, Ala? Is that you're raising your hand? Do you want to? Yeah, as the applicant, you want to just come up on the item. That would be better. All right, thank you. At this time, we'll close public comment, and then we'll bring it back to council. And this isn't a regular city council meeting, so we're not going through some of the formalities that we have there with announcements and such. We'll do some closing remarks at the end, and we'll get right into the meat of it. And our city manager, Mr. Collins, if you'll start us off on introducing the first item.
Yes, thank you, Scott Collins, City Manager. Thank you, Mayor and Council members and members of the public who are here and watching at home. The first item on the agenda is the adoption of Resolution Number 9418, which is terminating the Central Coast Community Energy Joint Powers Agreement and approving and authorizing the mayor to execute related termination agreement. As Council will recall, we were pursuing a partnership with the City of SLO to form, and we did form, a JPA between the two entities to create a community choice energy program for the SLO area. Unfortunately, with the actions taken by the PUC shortly after we formed that group, it became disadvantageous to us from a feasibility standpoint, and we were offered the opportunity, both the City of SLO and Morro Bay, to join the Monterey Bay Community Power Authority. Staff went to that meeting, both from the City of SLO and Morro Bay, and we were received with open arms. They're having the actual meeting on December 5th to formalize that, but they were very receptive and seemed there was uniformity in seeing the bigger value of having a larger CCE on the Central Coast and forming a bigger alliance. Ultimately, it will serve to benefit everyone in these communities. And so City Council approved joining that group. However, there's some cleanup here. We do need to terminate the JPA via resolution and then authorize the mayor to actually sign the execution of the termination agreement. So that's the long and short of it. I'm happy to answer any questions that council may have, but the recommendation is to do just that.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you. Questions for this? And we'll start with Red. Any questions?
Yes. Thank you, Scott. And I recall that next Wednesday, the Monterey Bay PCA meets to vote on whether to accept SLO and Morro Bay.
That's correct.
Okay,
yeah.
You're going to attend that meeting?
I'm debating it. I know that Chris Reed, City of SLO Sustainability Manager, will be attending, and I believe the Mayor Armin will also attend.
Okay.
But as I mentioned, both myself and Robert Hill went a couple weeks ago, and they were very, very supportive of it. So if I can make it, I will attend, but that'll be the actual formal vote.
Right.
Yes.
Okay. Very cool. That's all. Thanks.
Matt?
No?
John?
No
Marlis?
Red asked my question, so thank you.
Okay. And one other note, the city manager for SLO, Derek Johnson, and I are going to meet next week to discuss the MOU between the cities, because we will share a seat on that board if the vote goes as we assume it will on December 5th. So we're going to work that out, and I don't know if we need to bring that back, but I imagine we probably would bring it back to City Council for formalization. But ultimately, that agreement will look at how do we communicate shared values, make sure whoever is the representative of both cities is voting in a way that we support, and then talk about how we may rotate or how alternates will work and that whole thing. So we'll bring that back in January.
Okay, great. Yeah. Hey, I was wondering if somebody could close the doors back there, please. That'd be great. Thank you. Thank you. Thanks, Don. Okay, with that, I don't have any questions. We'll get right into deliberation. I'll start at the end with Mr. Davis, and we'll start with deliberations on this.
Yes, I support the recommendation.
Great. Matt?
Yep.
John?
I also support it.
Yep.
As do I.
Okay. I support as well. This is something we've had long discussion on. This is just the next step in this,
yep.
And we'll probably get to another few more steps as far as the MOU. Support it as well with that. We'll take a motion.
Okay.
Unless there's any other, are there any other remarks?
No. Okay. I was going to make a motion.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay. I move that we adopt resolution number 94-18, terminating the Central Coast Community Energy Joint Powers Agreement and approving and authorizing the mayor to execute related termination agreement.
Second.
A motion by Ms. McPherson, second by Mr. Makowiecki. Any further discussion? None? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? None. Motion carries 5-0. Okay. All right, Lori. Thank you. And then next one, item number 2.
Yes. Eric, can you get our slideshow set to go? Thank you. I'll just kick this off real quick and hand it over to our finance director, Jen Calloway. What we're here to discuss tonight is the fiscal year 2018-19 first quarter budget performance and status report. Which is the 3 months from July to the end of September 2018, as well as a consideration of proposed job reclassifications and the utility division reorganization. So Jen will discuss the budget performance and status report, and I'll talk about the proposed reclasses.
Thank you. Good evening. This is the first quarter budget update, and as per Council's previous direction, a draft of this was shared with the CFAC committee on November 20th. The attachment 1 that's provided to the staff report was provided in full. The staff report itself was a simple cover page as we added the detail in after the CFAC meeting. CFAC asked several good questions and in general agreed by consensus to the recommendations in the report. There's one additional recommendation that was added as a budget adjustment, and I'll address that when we get to it, just so you're aware of what the committee did not have a chance to weigh in on. Overall, the first quarter results are positive. Revenues are trending well. If we look at our three most economically sensitive revenues, TOT, property tax, and sales tax, TOT is trending well. We have some late payments that aren't illustrated in the numbers provided in the report, but when we consider those and adjust for those, we're trending slightly higher than the previous year in the first quarter. Property tax is trending consistently as well, although we know that first quarter is not a good indicator of property tax as it comes in during the second quarter. And then our sales tax numbers, these are not frankly very reliable. The California State Department of Tax and Fee Administration implemented a new reporting system, and there were significant errors as a result of that due to what is speculated as a lack of training by the businesses in their reporting. So our consultants provided numbers overall down about 10%. Again, that's mostly due to the reporting errors. The consultants went through and adjusted for what they believed to be the errors, and as a whole, the state is up slightly, or they speculate up slightly by about 1.6%, but as a region, we're starting to fall behind in sales tax a little bit by 1.3%. They are estimating Morro Bay is down 1.9%. Those are estimates. I can't highlight that enough. It's not very reliable data to go on, so we don't have any adjustments at this point, but we'll monitor it closely going into mid-year, and they expect the state to have corrected those errors by the time we receive our next report from them. Our next set of revenues are charges for service. Those are trending really high when compared to last year, but there's some reasons for that. We have a new IT service fee that was added to the fee schedule when we adopted the 18-19 master fee schedule, and that goes to directly offset our GIS, ArcGIS services, and some of our IT services. So there's offsetting expenditures for that. The cannabis application fees are also included in this category. That's a $90,000, and there's offsetting expenditures for that as well to review those application fees. And then our overall plan check building permits and our permitting fees are up quite significantly. Some of this is carryover from last year. There's a timing issue with when permits are issued versus reviewed, and payments come in kind of half and half. So, but overall, it's an indication that development is still strong in the city, so that's positive for us. Licenses and permits also trending very well, as is our business tax. For our general fund expenditures, our salary and benefits trending well for the first quarter, and we do have a total budget increase recommendation of about $68,000. Supplies and materials and services also trending well, and we have some budget savings from there, so we have a proposed decrease of about $48,000. So our net recommended budget increase for expenditures is almost $20,000. And we'll go through the detail of those in just a second. Our salary and benefits notes, we have our city manager contract increase that was approved Tuesday night. It's $11,600. Citywide reclassifications of about $25,000. And our public works reallocation of about $31,000. The public works reallocation, when, if you recall, when we adopted the budget in June, we went through and tried to allocate staff to departments and funds to which they were working. Our estimates were off for the wastewater treatment plant. We had over-allocated administrative support to the wastewater treatment plant when we were closing out the first quarter and truing that up. We realize that, so we're making this adjustment to take that administrative support time out of the wastewater treatment plant and put it back into the general fund and public works where staff is actually allocating their time. So that's a true-up item. For contract services, we noted expenditure savings. So we had savings from our animal service contract with the county. It was less than we had budgeted. We had savings from our fee study that we had budgeted that's underway currently. And then we added $12,000 for our CCE expense that was approved by the council about a few weeks ago. So that nets out to about $48,000 in savings in the contract services section. So projected year-end revenues over expenditures, and again, this is first quarter, so this will likely fluctuate and be a different number come mid-year, but we want to monitor this. It's $154,000. That sounds like a good savings at this point, but we can account for that and expected that. We paid our annual UAL payment, our unfunded accrued liability payment, in July. Previously, we paid that monthly. By making the one-time lump sum payment, we saved about $50,000 citywide in interest. $35,000 was for the general fund. That's part of the $154,000. We also had savings from our prepayment of the fire side fund. So that's about $138,000 and about $19,000 in additional expenditure savings. So overall, that's how we laid into that $154,000 at this point that we're expecting for year-end revenues over expenditures. Measure Q trending well. Again, that sales tax reporting issue impacted Measure Q. So revenues look like they're low at this point, but we'll true those up and monitor it closely going into the second quarter and have better numbers for the community and council at that point. And if we have to make adjustments, we'll do so. TBID is also trending well. We do have a budget adjustment recommendation of $65,000, and that's the support of Amgen that was previously approved by council. So this will give us authority to make that appropriation. I'm going to talk about capital projects real quickly and highlight the major adjustments that we've proposed in the first quarter. We have the North Point parking lot improvements of about $3,000, Cloisters landscape improvements of $30,000, and a shade structure at Cloisters for $25,000. So a total contract services adjustment for the Cloisters of $55,000. That comes out of the Cloisters assessment district, and those were proposed out of conversations with residents in the Cloisters and our quarterly meetings with those residents. Also, we had approved in our budget a purchase of a new trolley. Our quotes came in about $2,300 more than budgeted, so we have a budget adjustment in there to account for that. We have a proposal to install artificial turf at Centennial Park. This was on the deferred building list for that was included in the budget. It was a lower priority item. If approved by the council tonight, we're recommending to use park fees for that rather than our deferred maintenance fund. And then we have mold remediation in the community center, $7,500. And the one item that the CFAC committee did not hear was refinishing of the wood floors in the auditorium center at the community center, auditorium room in the community center, and that's about $4,000, and that would come out of our facilities fund. And then, while not a budget adjustment, we did indicate that we would come back on status with the bocce ball courts. We have an expenditure item in here for bocce ball for surveying work. There was $32,000 in the operating budget already approved, and that would be used for the surveying work that would then come to staff. And I'm sure Rob can fill in on more detail if you have questions on that. For the Harbor Fund, Council accepted a state grant to purchase rescue equipment. So we're recognizing receipt of that grant, expenditure of the grant to purchase that equipment, and a little bit of excess coming out of accumulation to offset the difference between the equipment and the amount of the grant received. Two additional adjustments for Cloisters and North Point are two assessment districts. We did our city engineer's report for those districts after we adopted the budget. So the $30,000 recommendation and operating expenditures for Cloisters and $5,200 for North Point is for those operating expenses. Those are the utilities, the water, electricity, miscellaneous supplies. So that'll give us appropriation in those two funds for those operating expenditures. I'm going to pass over to the city manager for the job classifications and reorganizations.
Thank you, Jen. Now's an opportunity if you prefer to ask questions about what Jen's already presented, or we can go through the classifications and then do the full thing. Leave it up to council.
Yeah, just council, how do you feel it might be easier to do that? Any questions now, or do you want to go through the whole thing? We have yes that we want to ask questions, and yes that we... Let's go ahead and ask some questions. Yeah.
Yes, I'd like to ask Rob about the... are you calling on me?
No. Yeah, go ahead. You had questions. I thought you had questions.
Yes.
Sorry.
Rob, on the bocce ball court, you are proposing two courts and a portable greenhouse. And as I understand it, the greenhouse is going to be paid for by others?
That is my understanding, is that there's a joint project between Morro Bay and Bloom and the active adults to fund portions of the bocce ball greenhouse project, paying for a portion of the bocce ball and paying for the greenhouse project. I don't have the details on how much is going to which, but I believe it's a total of $6,000 for the project. And we're not proposing to spend $32,000 for surveying work. That would be an awful lot of surveying work on that small lot. It's $2,500 for survey work, and that is really... the emphasis it will be because we need to meet ADA requirements, and the site does have a bit of slope to it, so we need to make sure that we grade that to accommodate accessibility requirements.
Okay. And there is room on that lot for the courts and for the greenhouse and also some pathways?
It's going to be a tight site to put everything that everybody wants there. We may have to make – bocce ball doesn't really have a defined court size for recreational and kind of sub-pro level bocce ball. So we have some flexibility on the court length. So we'll be working to accommodate the largest courts that we can supply on there and still have effective use of a greenhouse facility there too.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, Matt, any questions? John, you have questions for this portion? You'll wait to the end?
Well, I do have a question on actually the installation of artificial turf at Centennial Park. Just refresh my memory of our discussion when we were talking about capital projects. Was this deferred? And I guess I'm thinking about the fact that we have a Centennial Park plan that would basically take out the artificial turf, so I'm just wondering why we're doing it now.
Yeah, there was a discussion at the budget hearing, and I think that was one of the reasons why it was kind of put to the B list. Our general feeling is it's probably 2 to 3 years minimum before we would see anything happen with the overall Centennial project. There's a lot of things that have to happen between now and then even to make that occur. So it is, quite frankly, an eyesore in the middle of the heart of the harbor area, and Morro Bay and Bloom and others have kind of come to us with different solutions, and we were able to get a pretty good deal. $12,000 is a pretty good deal for that patch of land to create something a little more beneficial to the community and visiting those that were visiting us. So that was kind of the decision that was made as far as bringing this recommendation forward to CFAC and then council.
Okay, and why is there a boat parked there in the middle of it?
So the boat is parked on private parking lot. We're in discussions with the owner of the property there about that and trying to help facilitate them that being moved along. But it is on private property at this point.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting. Thank you.
Okay. Jen, I had some questions on the reporting for the sales tax, and you mentioned that there was an error and there was kind of a training thing. So is that I guess my question relates to I don't think we've had anything like that reported to us. So this is just kind of an anomaly for this reporting session, this portion of it from HDL?
Correct. This is the first time we started to hear about it via our listserv, our finance listserv, but we Scott Graham and I met with our consultant about 2 weeks ago, and they brought more information in. And there's some flyers in City Hall, and I think the council each received one that are from our consultant that talk about our sales tax, and they give some more information and detail in there. But it is they don't switch reporting systems very often in the state, and because they did switch it, they're experiencing this issue where businesses are getting frustrated with the new requirements for reporting and the categorization, so they're just kind of dumping it into one category and it's not getting distributed properly.
Okay, all right. And then on the Cloisters lot, at some point when that is finalized, but they're going to be going to Coastal Commission at that point, but when that's where it should be at the final stage for that, and those funds will come back to council to determine the firehouse loan or other. Is that correct?
That's correct. We will have it agendized on CFAC. I think that was the direction that had been previously provided with recommendations and proposed, whether it goes down to pay the fire station loan or maybe PERS or some other use. We'll have that discussion at CFAC and come back to council with CFAC's recommendation and staff's recommendation.
Okay. All right. Thanks. And then the artificial turf item, Rob. I guess my question was, we also had on the budget the Tidelands handrail. So was that funded, and is that done, or is there?
The handrails on various stairs have been in the budget for several years. We've received construction proposals from several companies that we've had a difficult time finalizing a contract with due to the hoops that you need to jump through to do work for government. So you need to have a city business license, have meet certain insurance requirements, pay prevailing wage. Many of the contractors don't want to do those things. I think we have somebody on board now that is willing to do that. It's not a Morro Bay local fabricator, unfortunately. It's somebody over the hill in the Paso Robles area that is fabricating those handrails. So.
Okay, but they're funded?
Yes.
Okay, all right, cool. And then I guess on the greenhouse comment, I was just they understand that that whole thing is temporary. No different than the discussion we had with the bocce court?
Correct.
Okay. Okay. All right. Thanks. All right. Any questions on the finance board? No? You might as well. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Might as well get them in now. Yeah. Since, thanks, Jen, for your information. staff report, page 23. Quick question. It's goes along with the sales tax, and I did review the HDL report. And obviously your report. My question is, it appears that if we're 1.8% behind, that's about $32,000 annualized. So not a huge hit, but nonetheless a downward trend. How certain is that 1.8%? Is that just like a shot in the dark with regard to, I mean, how much data supports that potential?
So HDL has, you know, much more access to sales tax information than we do here, and as kind of experts in that field, they've gone through and made adjustments based on their knowledge and their, you know, best guess, if you will. But it's really not that; it's not an accurate estimate. So we really have to wait till mid-year, come back at that point and see where we're at, and they'll give us revised budget numbers at that point too, assuming the state has made all the corrections.
And we don't know what sector that might be in specifically. It's not that detailed yet.
I saw that
report. But.
Yeah, there wasn't. Restaurants appeared to be doing pretty well still. Like auto industry is down significantly. They project that to continue. They think that's an accurate trend, but just not reliable enough at this point.
Okay, great. Page 24. Of the staff report, quick question on that. The late payment on TOT, I don't quite understand. Is that just lagging payments from hoteliers that come in after the period ends?
Yeah, our hoteliers do a really good job of getting in by the end of the month. Some of our vacation rental Airbnbs, mobile home parks, or RV parks, may not get in quite as quickly as the hoteliers. So some of those are lagging, and then there's some accrual back to the first quarter that's a little lagging behind, too.
And do we know about how much that late amount is approximately? What to expect?
I don't have the number with me, but I know it's slightly higher than it was last year, so okay. About 30-ish thousand.
Yeah. Okay, great. Thank you. Page 32, real quickly. I had a question, if I can get there, on the pro forma. First question was on line item use of money and property being significantly different than the prior year, $134,630 in fiscal year 17-18 and $42,000, yet your projection at the end of the year looks like it's going to be at budget. What's in use of money and property, and what's the issue? Is this a timing issue?
There's a little bit of a timing issue. So that is rental income and interest. So some of our interest likely came in after we closed September 30th. That might have been captured the first quarter in 17-18. I could go back and look at the detail. We did one of our rental properties became vacated, so that's part of why the difference is slightly down. And then those would be the two main issues. And I could get you detail and send that out to the council.
Yeah, I'm sorry I didn't ask you before that. It looked like about an $80,000 variance, and it seemed to be significant, but I didn't see detail on it. So that's fine as long as it apparently will trend towards what we budgeted. There's not any adjustments that were necessary now, I would guess. Then on overtime, under the second expenditure line item, 61% of budget in the first quarter, $123,273, yet we're assuming we're going to trend out at $202,529, our budgeted amount. Were there some extra issues that occurred now that are period-related or...
So that's almost entirely related to the fire department. It's related to mutual aid support. We haven't adjusted for that extra time from the fire department nor from the reimbursement that we're going to get. So when we come back at mid-year, we'll have more final numbers for that, and we'll make those adjustments. If you take out what we're expecting to receive in reimbursement, they're trending under budget at about 14% for the general fund, but we want to refine those numbers a little bit, and then we'll do that adjustment at mid-year.
Great. That's what I thought the answer would be, but I had a couple of people ask me from the public and wanted to make sure that that was the answer, so thank you for that. And last note, if we look at net surplus or use of reserves at $1.3 million, I think you very nicely stated in the summary what that consists of. It's mainly the sales tax timing issue of about $150K, which includes maybe a slight decrease based upon the data that we have now. $90K of that is the use of money. $870 was the pay down on CalPERS, which saved us a significant amount. And then there was about $100,000 supply variance, and that was explained and should trend out. Just to summarize that, the majority of that not isn't necessarily negative, but and that bottom line number doesn't look as bad as it appears to be given the summary that I just gave. Would you agree with that?
That's correct. They're all timing issues.
Okay. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Good. All right. Thanks. Actually, it's kind of nice to get that those types of conversations done. Yeah. Good. All right. Okay, moving on to the next portion. Scott, thank you.
I'll pick it up from here on the reclassification discussion. So just by way of context, it's typical for cities to kind of on a rolling basis to look at their classification plan to ensure that there's the job classifications appropriately reflect what employees are actually doing in the field. Our own city personnel and regulations provide guidance for how to prepare and review the classification plan and make sure that we are appropriately staffing, are putting people in the right positions, and if they are doing duties outside of their job classification or on a regular basis, that we find ways to reflect that and maybe move them into a different classification or look at that classification and maybe adjust that itself. We have a pretty good criteria, I would say, to help. Is this thing on? What is on? Might have to wing this one. There are basically six different criteria that we look at to help drive an objective review of each position. If we want to make sure that the person or get an idea of, you know, what percentage of their time they're actually doing that work compared to the regular duties that are already in that existing classification. Are the duties necessary to provide the essential service? And if it's yes, is it temporary, sporadic, or enduring? What is the employee's current competency level, both that they're currently assigned duties and additional duties? Does the employee supervisor effectively supervise that individual or other employees? Is this person picking up other duties that could otherwise be reassigned? And then ultimately considering equity across all similar performed duties with other employees, just make sure that we're fair. And so we looked at six positions within the city over the last 6 months to determine if they're working out of class, and we found that they were. We have, looks like it's working now. Okay. Great. So the six positions, the rec coordinator, the engineering classifications, the deputy city clerk, human resources analyst, city clerk, human resources manager, and the fire department admin tech. As far as the recreation coordinator position is concerned, we have somebody who's really functioning outside of her currently assigned role, which is more of an admin position. She oversees the kids club, which is supervising 20 to 30 kids every day. She runs the kids camp, does a lot of things that are far outside of more of a clerical role, which she's currently assigned. And so the recommendation is to move her into the recreation coordinator position and a new salary band to go with that to make it more competitive with within the county, excluding the the low end and the high end in the county to make sure we're not being pulled by an outlier in either direction. Let's see if there's anything else on that. Yeah, so the overall impact of that recommendation is about $2,885 for the year. The next set of and within that, we're in order to make this work so there's not a significant financial impact, we're recommending the creation of an administrative tech position. The way we're going to make this work is that we'll reduce hours for some of our part-time people so that we can make room for this admin tech to help the department run more efficiently and allow people to perform their regular duties. And it seems to work. And again, the overall impact is about $2,900. The next is the engineering section of the city. We looked at this from a different angle. This is more about how we're competing locally. As City Council may recall, we had this discussion about the engineering earlier in the year. There's about 1,000 employees that are going to be hired by Caltrans engineers, that is, to help facilitate spending of Senate Bill 1 funding. And now that we've gotten through the election and Proposition 6 was defeated, we'll see that continue. So that's putting a lot of pressure on hiring engineers and making it more difficult to retain and recruit those to our fine city. What we're proposing is moving kind of the entire band of engineering positions up a little bit to be more competitive. Overall impact for doing that is about $13,000 for the year. This one's a little smaller to read. My apologies. So City Clerk and Human Resources Division, in 2016, towards the end of the year, Administrative Services Division was blown up and divided into multiple factions. This was done to save money. Finance was pulled out and became a standalone department. IT was assigned to the Deputy City Manager, and responsibility for Human Resources was assigned to the City Clerk's office. And when the Deputy City Manager position was abolished, IT was shifted to finance. So since 2016, or really the beginning of 2017, the clerk's office has consisted of the city clerk risk manager position, the legal assistant deputy city clerk position, and human resources analyst position. The city put a premium on really trying to bring the city up into date into the modern era as far as updating its rules and regulations, record retention policy, harassment, discrimination, retaliation policies, drug-free workforce policy, employee-employer relations, negotiating the MOUs with the various unions and bargaining units in the city, and the city clerk's office played a huge role in that, and those negotiations that I believe were successful. There's a notable demand being placed on the clerk's office, both from the clerk side and human resources side, just to stay up on what's all the changes that are being made at the state and federal level. Based on the changes that have occurred, there's a lot more being requested of this division, this small division of three. They turn over an incredible amount of work. They do a high level of professionalism, and all of them are working out of class. That was our determination. So really trying to honor that and recognize that the three positions would be moved, and there's a lot of detail to explain how that would occur, but ultimately the legal assistant deputy city clerk would be reclassified as an executive assistant deputy city clerk. The human resources analyst, we would create a series of one and two, so that depending on where we are, Lori Goforth performs that role very well. We hope she never retires, but if she does, we would have flexibility to either hire at the kind of lower end, somebody in the beginning of their career, or to the higher end. That gives us more flexibility. And the city clerk risk manager is Dan Swanson. You all know She is doing an exceptional job as our kind of our HR pro, as well as being a city clerk, and really she's performing at a division head level, and that's what we want to try to recognize here. The overall impact, if these changes were made, it would be $9,500 for the year. The fire department position, they're basically all sworn positions with the exception of their admin tech, who works a three-quarter time. The recommendation here is that this classification is generic, and there are some duties that are specific that she does it to the fire world, if you will. There isn't any comparison locally for us to look at, so we're not recommending any shift in salary. However, strong feelings from the fire department that there is a reason to create kind of a specialist role, if you will, within the admin tech for fire. And then slightly different note, but still in the reorganization world, the utility division has been undergoing an evaluation for several years to look at a new structure, particularly as it relates to anticipation of a new water reclamation facility and moving out of a plant that's well over 50 years old into a high-tech world. And realizing we can probably get by with less, but also more cross-training and where somebody could be a wastewater collection employee one day, the next day water, then the day after that wastewater operations. That's where a lot of smaller agencies are moving towards. And Joe Mueller, as the utility division manager, has been instrumental in really kind of thinking through a lot of the what-ifs and working very closely with the staff and the SEIU representatives to develop a structure that makes sense for them, that creates more opportunities for growth and recognizes those who want to learn more than just one of the fields. We are a small, lean operation, and it makes sense that we cross-train and that they were recognized for that. So there, with this, we'd create literally three positions and abolish 20 job descriptions in that process, and there was support from SEIU to move forward. There's actual net savings from this because we would in essence be reducing two positions. Nobody would go home; those would be vacancies. So the estimated net annual budget savings to the communities between $53,000 to $100,000, depending upon where people fall in the classifications. And that concludes my very short presentation, but I know there's a lot in there, and we do have Lori Goforth here, as well as Rob and Joe Mueller can talk about the utility division, and I can answer any other questions.
Okay, great. Questions? Marlis, you want to start us off on questions?
Thank you. Thank you for the report. Appreciate it. First of all, just have some general questions about how you went about this process. How frequently would you be actually looking at positions and doing this kind of comparison to see if the duties fit the salary, et cetera?
The best practice is typically to do, you kind of look at your organization as much, as often as you can, kind of on a rolling basis. At least larger organizations, when I was in Santa Cruz, we kind of look at a few positions every year because you had over 1,000 employees. So it would be pretty much impossible to do them all at once. General rule of thumb is every 5 to 10 years you do an entire classification compensation study, which are very expensive and time-consuming, and I think we sort of started and stopped one of those several years ago. But this is a little different because when I came in, I just started asking questions and wanted to understand what there was a lot of reorganization in 2016 and 15 and how is that working, and a lot of cases working very smoothly, in some cases not as well. We want to definitely honor and recognize those who are working outside of maybe what made sense in 2016 no longer makes sense now. So I think it's a combination of rolling and then sometimes doing these big ones every 5 to 10 years.
So who participated in the process? Was it?
All department heads, I put the question to them about, what's working, what's not. I know we all have our loyalties to employees, but this is about an objective fact-finding thing, and that's why we had that criteria to guide it. It was myself and Jen, kind of primaries. Of course, we had HR supporting that, but we know that there's an outcome that could benefit all of them, so that's why we're careful to make sure that, I had ultimate final review of that and made sure that it was done properly and objectively, but that it's usually a team approach, but you know, they came through me in the end.
Right.
Yeah.
And so this, you're making recommendations on a certain number of positions. Are you continuing this process? Are there other positions you're going to be looking at? Where are you in the whole?
Yeah, I mean, we did a pretty I would say pretty exhaustive look this time around, but there's always ones that you miss, and then you go through the process and you learn some things. So there may be a few others kind of out there, and you know, in the harbor area there's some, but those are some of the issues are around the available budget for them, so there's still work to do. Yeah.
Right. Okay. And then I just have some specific questions. Public Works and Engineering, do we still have vacant positions in that department?
We had a senior engineer position which was unbudgeted and through the budget process, the current budget we're in. It didn't abolish that position, so we could always bring it back, but at this time we don't have any vacancies. Is that correct, Rob?
Correct. We are filling that role through contract services.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So you are essentially fully.
Right. And that was a lot of that was because, you know, the senior engineer does pay a lot of money, but in terms of the actual market, we can't compete for a senior.
For the duties that we're asking for, right, we're a ways below market.
Okay. And in the utility division reorganization, do we currently have 17 or are there vacancies in that?
There are existing vacancies.
There are existing vacancies.
Yeah. As Scott said, nobody goes home because of this. This is we had talked about this reduction a couple budgets ago, that this will be the logical outcome of moving forward with the WRF project and consolidating those utility right duties.
So you've been working on it for some time.
Yes.
All right. Those are my questions. Thanks.
All right. John?
Great. Similar questions. I had one follow-up question to that, and thanks for the report and the excellent detail in the staff report. What happens if the organization, the city, does not reclassify positions that are performing routine duties outside of the job description and or classification they exist in? What are the risks to the city for that?
Well, I don't know if they're legal risks, but there certainly are retention risks, I would say, particularly when we have high-performing individuals who have kind of put their head down and gone to bat and done the work that's outside of what they're classified to do. So that's the risk I see, but it sounds like Joe is going to chime in.
I sense there might be legal risks, too.
As you know, I never like to give information that someone could use against the city, so let me just be general. People are entitled to be paid for the actual work they do, and if they're doing more work than they're getting paid for, they can bring an action to make sure they're getting paid what they should get paid.
So there is a risk?
Yes.
Thank you. Appreciate that. That's the only question I had. Thanks.
Okay, Matt?
Yes, I am. Marlis asked some wonderful questions, and so perfect. But I'm thinking about it as going along with it. Will these job descriptions help? I understand the job consolidation and the extra training that we'll have in those positions. Will they help if and when we have an economic downturn in terms of if we do have to let people go?
Mm-hmm. That's a good question. I don't know. I don't really know the answer to that. You know, I think if we have a downturn, it will put increased pressure to create efficiencies, although we're trying to be proactive and do that anyhow. And one of those is the utility division, which kind of exemplifies that. But I don't see it putting more strain on the, because the relative financial impact is pretty minimal to the general fund to move in this direction overall. I think it's $20,000 impact or thereabouts. So I don't see it creating more of a strain. It could point to the future if we have prolonged recession or you know, the CalPERS situation.
No, what made me think of it, Marlis was asking some questions, but then I was thinking of what police and fire have done over the years in terms of consolidating and having people doing double or triple duties and with the job skills.
Right.
And then when those ups and downs come, then the city is still protected to have the personnel behind them.
Right.
So that's where that question comes
from.
And also, Marlis asked the one question about the timeline or the timeline that you would... These descriptions right now, these regenerations or reforming of these positions, and you said something like it comes along periodically, be it yearly or biannually, whenever we start to assess the different needs that we have.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's this will provide some stability for a while, I believe. But as I mentioned, we went through the process and we learned some things, so there may be some follow up next year. I also did mention, you know, we haven't really done a full-blown class and compensation study, though I think we all know we performed a little bit behind the curve in terms of the median salaries for us and those in the region. So I think that might be something to look at. Yeah.
Okay, great. Red?
Thanks for doing this work. If council approves this tonight, when do the salary bans take effect?
Lori's here, but I believe it would go into effect in the next pay period. Yes.
Okay. And I want to ask some specific questions about the fire department administrative technician. The generic duties for an administrative technician are enumerated 1 through 17, and then there are an additional 12 that are specific to the fire department that all seem to be related to the previous 17. So my question is, how many administrative technicians do we have on board and where do they work?
One in Harbor. There's one at Harbor currently, and that's the only, there's one in the Harbor department currently.
Okay. And does that Harbor Department administrative technician perform the basic generic 17 duties and then specific duties that are specific to the Harbor Department in addition?
Lori, I'll let you correct me if I'm wrong, but she performs the generic duties or the basic duties that are listed in the regular administrative technician job description. There's nothing specific necessarily to Harbor that would be called out separately. The fire department proposed job description for admin tech was based on research that Lori and Dana had done with other comparable cities, and their fire departments did have specific job classifications for admin techs because of the duties there. So that was how this came about.
Okay, so these duties are based on comparisons with other cities?
Correct.
Okay. So if, for instance, the two administrative technicians wanted to trade positions, how difficult is that if one is at a different classification that includes the words fire department?
It would be... kind of difficult because they would have to know quite a bit about the emergency services, the reimbursement process, the funding, and all the different coding that the state uses to get reimbursement, and all their different trainings that the firefighters have, their paramedics have. I mean, that could be done, but it would be it couldn't be a quick process.
So what if that the fire department position became vacant and we are recruiting, then are we very limited in our recruitment pool because of the description of additional duties?
Yes, probably in the training. If we hired someone without the experience, it would fall on either our fire marshal, the chief, or one of the captains to do a lot of that work until the new admin tech got on board.
Right.
Okay.
And the other thing is that we wouldn't We wouldn't write the recruitment or description in such a way that it would preclude somebody without fire background to apply and actually be successful in the recruitment. In other words, somebody who has been administrative tech somewhere else or is aspiring to be someone wouldn't be thrown out because they don't have a fire background, if that makes sense. They just we would preference on somebody who has had experience in the fire world.
But anybody who could perform the basic 17 tasks
would be considered eligible. Would be considered. Yes.
Okay.
If that makes sense.
That makes a great deal of sense.
Yeah.
It makes more sense to me than to specialize the position. But okay. That's all I have. Thanks.
Okay. Thanks, Red. Welcome, Lori. Thanks for coming tonight. I guess my question is general in the sense that as we are, thanks as well as far as going through this process. I imagine, coming on and going through the part of evaluating everything gets to this point. But it would be fair to say that creating efficiencies will be in of itself creating job reclassifications, and that's an ongoing thing.
That's correct.
Okay, and even to Red's point about recruiting, as an example, it could be with any specific, whether it's within the fire, that in of itself could create some reclassification. If by chance we lost someone and then we decided, okay, well, there's some reclassification, there's some for whatever purpose, that would be something you would evaluate as well.
That's right. I mean, I think being the size that we are, we have inherently have to allow for some flexibility, though, only to a certain point. If there's no boundaries, it becomes hard to compare yourself and benchmark.
Okay. All right. Those are the only questions I have at this point.
Could I ask one more question?
Sure. Follow-up questions?
I just wanted to raise the issue that Ms. Winholtz raised in an email just to clarify for the public, and that is whether or not we can do this at a special session. Can we make these changes at a special session?
Sorry, Laura.
Yes, you can. The Brown Act provision that was identified says you can't do specific positions, salary increases for specific executive positions, and none of these fall into that category.
Okay, thank you. Just wanted to clarify that. Thank you.
Okay, if there's no further questions, we can get into deliberation and how we want to move forward on this. Red, you want to start off?
Yes. And I guess we're looking at two different sections of the same agenda item. One is the financial report and the other is the personnel reclassification. So the first thing on the quarterly budget report, I find that to be very informational, as best we can get information from the state at this time. And I do want to say that I especially appreciate the work that Barbara Spagnola did on Next Door Morro Bay a couple of weeks ago to explain some of the apparent anomalies in this report. Barbara went to great lengths to explain the accelerated CalPERS payment, that property taxes are not received until the end of the year, or the third and fourth quarter, and then the sales tax new reporting system and the overtime for the fire department that will be reimbursed. So thank you very much, Barbara. So I'm good with the first quarter report. And as to the personnel, the combination of duties for the city clerk, Mr. Collins did identify as being somewhat unusual, but that's the way it is. That's the way the job has evolved, and it's working well. And so I'm very happy with the way that is being classified. the utilities division, I think, is brilliant. I really like the way that is being restructured. It's going to save the city money. It's going to provide greater promotional opportunities for our people on board, a lot of operating efficiencies. But the fire department administrative technician eludes me as to why that needs to be a separate classification, because the duties called upon to perform for the fire department all seem to me to be administrative technician duties. They are certainly specific to the fire department, but to me that's kind of expected when you work in a special department. You learn skills that are endemic to that department. So I can support adding those additional duties to the classification as a descriptor, but not making it a specific fire department administrative tech. So those are mine.
All right. Thanks, Red. Matt?
Okay. In terms of the quarterly update, and I really appreciate, Jen, how you described it, I think giving us all the information and putting out on blast what's going on in terms of the new system and the recording and system, I think that's great. That's great information. In terms of the job reclassification, Scott, your rationale in terms of laying it out and presenting it, I think is very clear and straightforward. I'm still kind of, I don't know about with Red, I think you make a good point. I understand, I think I understand the point you're making. But however, I'm not so sure that I could necessarily say no to it, because I do believe in terms of the requirements that they put down for that position are necessary for that position. But I understand your point, but I want to hear what everybody else is going to say.
All right, Matt. John?
Thank you, Dan. Thanks for all the staff work. And as I love the new report format now. This is maybe the third time or fourth that we've seen it, and it's very helpful, both in your didactic write-up, but also in the background information that you provide. Thank you for that. And I wanted to just recognize the Citizens Finance Advisory Committee for their work. I appreciate their detailed review, as always, with regard to these budget issues and their diligence in going through each of the recommended items. A couple of notes. I do support the staff report. If I look at the overall pro forma and I just think about the city as an organization, it's really apparent to me that what we see right now in the first quarter, because of the way we do accounting in cities, are really timing issues. Not to be nervous about bottom line numbers, because of the fact that often we don't recognize revenues until periods that occur well beyond the current period, and or expenses the same way. So I find the trends to be appropriate and explainable. The one concern I have is with sales tax, obviously, not only the timing of the fact that there was a changeover at the state level and they're behind in their payment, which I don't think we're probably going to get interest on. However, we will receive those funds, but just the uncertainty around, you know, potentially a 1.8% decline that at the end of the year could amount to, if it's that number, which maybe it's not, about $30,000 in unrealized revenues. So when I look at where we are right now, I think we're right on. It still points to the fact globally that we have a revenue issue. We need to, with regard to our strategic plan, I think move up that initiative when we begin to talk about it, and look at how we can begin to identify opportunities as quickly as possible for new revenues and maximize the current revenue streams that we have. And I'll just make that comment globally. So I do support that. With regard to the job descriptions in small organizations, it's really hard to find external comparisons that are apples to apples because of so many duties and responsibilities that a certain job title has in small organizations, like our city clerk, who's also now going to be reclassified as the HR director, as well as risk manager. And that's common in small organizations, and it's very difficult to do external comparisons to get benchmarking. And I appreciate that. However, I think that the process that you've utilized has been very thoughtful. very complete. It makes sense to me. It is based upon good rationale that doesn't concern me in terms of, how shall I say, overloading positions, either with responsibilities that are not appropriate or overpaying individuals that may not be performing the duties and responsibilities that have been laid out here. So I do support all of staff's recommendations. I believe that you've done a good job in doing your due diligence, and I think that also your comparative internal equity, where you compare jobs internally to other jobs, as I look at your classifications, make a lot of sense, and you've done a good job aligning those as well. So I commend you on your process, and with those high-level comments, I do fully support the staff recommendation as presented. Thank you.
Thanks, John. Marlis?
Yes. Well, I, too, appreciate all of the work that you put in. I especially like the format of the quarterly reports. And having been on the Citizens Finance Advisory Committee, when we basically had a data dump of all of the financial records and to make sense of it, and this is so much better where we can see exactly and get a really good snapshot. I share John's concern about revenues. I think we have to really look carefully at that and at ways to increase revenues. I'm satisfied with the recommendations for the budget adjustments, which I don't think people have mentioned, but the only reservation I have is the centennial, artificial turf, which I don't like to begin with. So, but I will go along with staff recommendation. Also appreciate the efforts to re-examine positions and to bring about equity, and I'm sure it's going to help with retention of employees, so I appreciate that effort and hope you will continue to do it. And I want to applaud the utility division for thinking forward and moving in the direction that we need to move and for saving us some money. So I support those staff recommendations as stated.
Great, thanks. I'll just start by saying I support staff recommendations as well. I will say, as I was looking at this earlier today, all the staff reports in this agenda are great, so thanks for that. I was really impressed with all that. Great to have the quarterly budget report organized the way it was, so I'm pleased with that. Thank you. I think as far as the budget items go, and I, as I pick up where Marlis was talking on the artificial turf, I'll just make mention, we did install a rainwater harvesting system, so I imagine that will be removed because I think that was something that was for turf enhancement. So I'm sure that's something that department staff will work with, but that was an interesting component down there at one point as well. And I just want to say thanks, Scott and staff, on assessing the reclassifications the way it was. We did do a brief assessment at one point. And I would say we as council didn't necessarily follow through with that. But it gave us somewhat of a benchmark. And I think if the council sees something like that in the future, there's probably some lessons learned on having that was a pretty in-depth compensation study. We'll probably be due for something like that. But going through the reclassification, as I said earlier, as you're creating efficiencies and you're looking at recruiting, going through this reclassification is the right thing. So the recommendations and the analysis in here was great for me to come to the decision and support the staff recommendations. I would entertain any other kind of conversation about Red's comments as far as about the fire admin tech. You bring up some good points on that. I was thinking about the admin tech for Harbor as well. Are those consistent, but just the duties consistent, but then there's there are specifics, because it's labeled as harbor versus fire. So I don't know if we need to have any more conversation on that. Maybe we can get some feedback from staff on those. But that's the only comments I have. You want to follow up on that, Red?
I had one question based on something you said about the rainwater. Rob, was that funded by an NEP grant? And if it was, I'm not sure what our obligation is.
I don't believe that that was grant-funded there. It might have been funded in part by city and Moabay and Bloom money. It will still be used for landscape irrigation. We still have a lot of shrubbery, ground cover around the perimeter of Centennial Stairway that we'll need to irrigate there, too. So we'll still make use of that irrigation system there.
Yes, we do have the beautiful new flower garden there in the triangle by the...
We're not proposing to remove that and replace that with artificial turf.
Okay, thanks.
Okay. Anything else on the fire admin tech discussion?
Well, I guess it's just a point of order. If we have a motion to follow staff recommendation on the staff report, and I agree with everything except the fire technician, how does that work? I don't want to vote against the whole thing just based on that one.
No, I think we're maybe some feedback from staff on these comments, and maybe you can give us some feedback on that. And some clarification on his Red's comments about the admin tech position and how it, there are some would there be some consistencies with admin tech for harbor and fire, yet they're just specialty departments?
Yeah, I mean, I think when we responded to Red's question via email that we're fully supportive of doing some more analysis of that because there's no salary effect on the individual who holds the position. I think there's less urgency. So if we want to kind of look at that classification in and of itself and bring something back later, that's completely appropriate. We can support that.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Okay. So what I get at that is there's unanimous support for the presentation of the staff report, both with file and receipt for the quarterly budget and the resolution for the reclassifications, however, the fire admin tech position could be removed from this portion of it and come back at a later date?
Yeah, bring kind of the whole thing together,
okay,
as well as some of the office assistant. That's where we learned some things going through this process, that there's probably a little bit more to that whole bundle to look at.
Yeah, and would that probably be something during the
probably
budget?
Ahead of the budget, yes.
Yeah, okay, that might dovetail in nicely then.
Okay.
Okay, I mean, all right. Everybody okay with that?
Sure.
Yeah.
Wait for a motion? Or?
Yeah, could I just make one more comment about the rainwater collection system? That was it's supposed to be a public demonstration of the process of collecting rainwater and reusing it. And so there's panels there, and they were paid for by Morobay and Bloom and I believe the National Estuary Program. So it's more of a public demonstration as opposed to just
something being utilized?
Yes, to show how it works. Okay, thank you.
The fire time.
So okay, I'll move that we authorize budget adjustments as recommended in the attached first quarter budget performance report of the staff report by adopting resolution number 95-18, authorizing staff to proceed with the first quarter budget adjustments, and approve proposed job descriptions and adopt resolution 96-18, amending the fiscal year 2018-19 salary schedule, excluding the fire position, and for staff to relook at that and bring that back at a later date.
Second.
Motion by Mr. Henning, second by Ms. McPherson. Any further discussion? And that was the fire admin tech position. Okay. All right. Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? None. Motion carries 5-0. Motion by Mr. Henning, second by Ms. McPherson. Okay. Got that. Okay. Good. All right. Next one up, item three, first quarter investment report.
Okay, thank you. I'm going to be really brief with this. This is first quarter investment report, again, was reviewed and shared with the CFAC committee, Citizens Finance Advisory Committee, on November 20th. The committee, by consensus, agreed with the report. The weighted average of the earnings in our portfolio is 1.6%. Our LAIF earnings are above 2%, finally, at 2.16%. We have a high percentage of liquidity at 89%. That's higher than our target of 65 to 70%. That was done intentionally. As we had discussed during budget, we needed to have cash on hand for the wharf project, and that was the planned use. However, after we started looking at our rates going up, our interest rates going up, the SRF planning loan that we've been approved for is a 0.71% interest rate. So it makes more sense for us to begin drawing that down and reinvesting our cash in some CDs earning higher interest. So we've gotten the paperwork together and are beginning to assemble the invoices for a drawdown on the SRF loan. And we're looking actively to purchase some CDs at higher interest rates. So, are there any questions?
All right, questions? Marlis, you want to start off?
I really just have one question. Given that the LAIF has a higher interest rate, I'm just curious why we don't put all of our money market accounts into that.
Yeah, we've been working on the spread, and you know, with the recommendation from the CVAC committee as well, to have obviously less money in our money market and more in LAIF and in our OPIS accounts. So we'll continue to transfer and balance those out after we've purchased some CDs and determine what the best value is.
Okay, thanks.
John?
No. Thanks for the report. I absolutely agree with where you're headed. The 10-year rate will probably increase again in December. So maybe with good timing, we'll have some higher rates on shorter-term CDs to improve that performance. And eventually, LAIF will catch up somewhere down the line to that. But I think your CD rates are going to be going up, and I agree with your assessment.
Thanks, John. Red, no questions. You want to conclude concluding remarks then? I'll start with Marlis again.
I appreciate the report. Thank you very much.
I appreciate the report. Thank you much.
Okay. And this is a receive and file. Thanks, Jen. Thank you very much. And then if that's good, then we'll conclude there and move on to item number 4.
I'll kick it off.
Okay. Thanks.
I'll wait for our harbor director to get the PowerPoint lined up. As he does this, the subject for this item number 4 is the approval of a community benefits agreement between the City of Morro Bay and Castlewind LLC and authorized rescission of the memorandum of cooperation with Trident Wind LLC. Just by way of some brief context, I just wanted to thank immensely city staff, including Eric Endersby and Scott Graham, as well as the City Council Subcommittee, Councilmember John Heading and Mayor Irons, as well as Alla Weinstein and her team, for a lot of really good discussion between the parties, as well as work with the community, the fishermen organizations, to bring something quite extraordinary to our community. I know there's a lot of work that needs to be done between now and ultimately a project, but just wanted to note just the extreme amount of good work that's been done and good cooperation between the parties and just good outreach to the community. So I'll turn it over to Eric Endersby, our harbor director, to take it from here.
Thank you, Mr. City Manager, and good evening, Mayor and City Council. So City Manager gave a good lead in there. Just by way of quick recap, as we know, Castle Wind has got a proposed floating offshore wind farm northwest of here out in federal waters. Castle Wind is formerly called Trident Winds. Trident is a joint venture, and we'll get into a little bit later. But our purpose tonight is to obtain council approval of a community benefit agreement, which we'll be referring to as a CBA. We're a little acronym heavy in here, but I'll try and keep it down to a minimum. Between Castle and the city for a proposed wind farm, 765 megawatts offshore northwest. It's about straight off the coast of Cambria,
about 30 miles outside the harbor here, and then rescinding an existing memorandum of cooperation, MOC, with Trident Winds, which is the company that was previously active here for this effort, which was a document we put together a couple of years ago when Trident came to town to work with us to try and look at getting our support for building this wind farm. So again, we're recommending council approve the CBA as proposed and rescind the MOC, the Memorandum of Cooperation. From a fiscal impact standpoint, assuming this gets approved upon execution, the city will receive a one-time $250,000 payment from CASEL for the city's commitment to an exclusive arrangement with CASEL for use of the power plant cooling water outfall conduit. We'll probably refer to that as the conduit or the outfall conduit pretty regularly. That would be used to bring the power farm's wire, power wire, into the Morro Bay power plant, into the power grid, adjacent to the power plant. We'd recommend this payment be placed in a special fund for now until we can figure out what we want to do with it and bring it back for recommendation and decision at a future time. Then if the proposed wind farm is built, there'll be long-term financial benefits realized as the project comes forward, both from a construction standpoint and operational standpoint. Then I'll get into a little more details later in the economic benefit study, which is included with the staff report. And then undetermined positive fiscal impacts resulting from the mutual benefits agreement, MBA, there's another one for you, with the local commercial fishermen, because Trident or CASEL has an agreement with the commercial fishermen that has some financial impacts as well. And we'll have some details on that a little bit later. So approximately 3 years, city staff, city leaders, subcommittee of the city council and others have worked with Trident and now CASEL on the proposed offshore project. Trident recently joined with German renewable energy company ENBW to form CASEL Winds, as I previously spoke. Morro Bay is an ideal strategic location for an offshore wind farm because of three primary reasons. One, the abundant offshore nearby winds. And as today we saw, those winds were not so offshore, they were right here. But we do have a lot of offshore winds here in the spring and summertime, and really all year round. You go out about 10 years, and it's a windy place out there. The next strategic thing here is PG&E's electrical substation connection to the power grid. Power connections to the grid are very expensive to build, and we've got one right here with the power station, which now no longer operates, but the substation still does. It's still an integral part of the grid. And the power plant's cooling water outfall conduit as a means to bring the cable ashore again. It'll probably run on the bottom to a certain extent, then they'll bury it at a certain depth, and then it'll come in across city property through the conduit. And then the MOC, the Memorandum of Cooperation, that was executed back in October of 2015 that enabled CASEL and the city to work cooperatively on CASEL's proposed project, which is what we've been doing for a number of years now. From a chart standpoint or locational standpoint, that's the chart of the coast here. The large blue box, that's the Monterey Bay National Marine Sanctuary, so the very southern end of that is Cambria. You really can't read the towns on there and whatnot, but that's Cambria at the south end down there, and then the Morro Bay WEA, that's the wind energy area, that's what it's officially being called, that's the area under consideration, and then you'll see the little line there, the underwater export cable, that points back towards Morro Bay, where we are. So we brought the CBA, the Community Benefits Agreement, an original one to council for consideration of approval on August 8th of last year, 2017. And while you were supportive, you wanted to see a little bit more from CASEL. We wanted to see them accomplish a couple major things. One was ensuring the local commercial fishing industry was supportive of the project by way of an agreement between CASEL and the Fishermen's Organization, which they have done, and I'll get on a little bit more later. And also for CASEL to conduct an analysis of the positive economic, fiscal, and other impacts to Morro Bay and the region, which they've also done. So a mutual benefits agreement was executed with the Morro Bay Commercial Fishermen's Organization. I think that was done back in October. And it also included the Port San Luis Fishermen's Association. It establishes a special fund to mitigate wind farm impacts to the local commercial fishing industry and help finance new business opportunities for the MBCFO, the Morro Bay Commercial Fishermen's Organization, and the Port San Luis Fishermen's Association. That fund can be used for infrastructure, equipment, and other grant opportunities benefiting the industry and community. It's very similar, or will be very similar, to the existing Central Coast Joint Cable Fisheries Liaison Committee, where a bunch of money is put into a pot and then grant applications are made for various projects from various people and entities. It also provides for opportunities for the two fishing organizations members to provide vessel support services to CASEL during construction operation, meaning commercial fishermen have boats and expertise and could be used for by CASEL for construction and operation uses. Also, training opportunities for members of those two associations, professional training opportunities, and also to minimize restrictions on the fishing industry of the wind farm itself. So they'll be talking with the fishermen, and obviously it's out their ways, but that's important fishing grounds out there that could potentially be cut off because of the farm and what the nature of the machines out there. They're large and can get in the way. Community benefits. The primary benefits to the city and community include a community communication plan that ensures full and transparent communications with and information to the community as the process moves forward. There's a very long and convoluted process by which the federal government will permit this, and that has its own whole set of public input and whatnot to go along with that. But the communication plan in the CBA ensures that locally there's an extra set of outreach and engagement that will happen with the community. Local economic development activities and goals, which would include promoting hiring of local qualified Morro Bay residents, establishing internships and training programs with local schools and universities, establishing maintenance and monitoring facility here in Morro Bay, promoting local accommodation during construction, promoting local supply chains during construction and maintenance, promoting green solutions and sustainable energy, and last but not least, assisting Morro Bay with its potential community choice aggregation efforts, because CASEL is an energy company that has expertise in that area, and they may be able to help us with that. And then finally, an option to lease the power plant outfall conduit to be negotiated. Again, we've got a one-time $250,000 payment in exchange for an exclusive lease option, and also to negotiate a long-term lease on mutually acceptable terms should CASEL be the successful winner of the BOEM lease. Benefits to CASEL include the city support in their bid with the Bureau of Ocean Energy Management, BOEM, for the leasing rights for the offshore area under consideration, a collaborative approach with the Morro Bay community, and exclusivity with CASEL in the BOEM leasing process, and longer if CASEL is successful in securing that lease from BOEM. Other important terms and conditions of the community benefits agreement include the city's discretionary authority is retained. In other words, all the permitting authority and all negotiating authority we will maintain. Nothing is binding on the city, subject to our normal discretionary authorities. The city's free to lease or use the power plant outfall conduit to other entities for non-wind farm uses or to another wind farm project, provided that project is not in the identified WEA, that area I had on that little chart off Cambria, and that none of those uses would preclude CASEL from continuing to use the conduit. Should CASEL not be the successful leaser in the BOEM process, they can sell basically their rights to the CBA outfall conduit option to another entity, but the city gets 50% of any such sale proceeds. The CBA contains various performance timelines, some of which are subject to the BOEM leasing process. So there's some performance timelines in there. And there's a force majeure clause, meaning that if there's some delays in the process, there are no fault to either party, or either party adjustments can be made on the fly. The basic fiscal and economic impacts to the county and to the area. CASEL did a economic analysis conducted by Stephen Hamilton. He's a professor at Cal Poly San Luis. It's included with the staff report, and the bullet points of it are here in the report. Basically, total economic impact to the county during operations of about $16.6 million annually. Fiscal tax benefit to the county of about $311,000 annually. 20 job years annually. Over the life of the project, which is about 30 operating years, 64, almost 65 full-time equivalent jobs. Direct impacts attributable to activity on the site, about $11 million annually. Indirect impacts, meaning those things that support the project, supply chains and such, about $4 million annually. And induced impacts, which are impacts resulting from employees and their spending, almost $2 million annually. Council proactively approached the city and community a few years ago in an open, transparent, and collaborative manner in order to gain the community's trust and support. I think they've done a pretty good job. As the city manager spoke earlier, we've been working closely with them for those 3 years. Council's worked with city staff and city leaders, commercial fishing industry, and others to present and vet their proposal. It has numerous financial and other benefits to the city, community, and county. The CBA agreement, or the fisherman's agreement, ensures that industry is taken care of and the fishing industry is on board, and we are recommending approval of the CBA. I will let Alla and Trident speak if she wishes to about the BOEM leasing process. Like I say, it's pretty complicated and convoluted. It's long term. It'll take many years for that to occur. There's a lot of milestones in that process. And with that, I'll leave it open to the questions.
Any questions from council at this point? Wait to hear from Alla on this. Okay. Alla, you want to come on up? Thank you.
Mayor, do you want to set a time for, or just let her?
Yeah, we'll set it. If you want to just set that for, yeah.
Not trying to say anything.
Well, thank you very much for having this meeting. It's been a long road, but I'm glad we're here. First, I do want to thank everybody for a lot of effort that went into it. The subcommittee members, the mayor, Jamie Irons, and John, the staff of the city, Scott with two T's, and Scott with one T, and Eric, and Joe, who worked very hard in getting it happen. Thank you for other council members with whom I spoke individually about the project to make sure that everybody was informed. As Eric said, it is not a straightforward and simple process. It will take many years to get through it. But I think we can do it, and I think the project is going to be very beneficial to the city, to the county, and to everybody involved. So Eric was going to put, maybe not, a flow chart of the BOEM process, but that's okay. The process that the project has to go through is going, it actually commenced. While Trident Winds, which was not the other joint venture, submitted unsolicited lease request to the Bureau of Ocean Management in January of 2016, as a part of the process, the Bureau of Ocean Energy Management had to see whether other interested parties were out there and expressed an interest on the site, which did occur in September of 2016, where Equinor, formerly Statoil, has expressed an interest. Once that happened, the process went into the competitive bidding process, meaning that the state and BOEM had to characterize the California coast to identify wind energy areas, and after that was done, then go to the stakeholders and seek their inputs. The characterization, initial characterization, occurred about middle of 2016. However, a major stakeholder, being Department of Defense, expressed a concern that no areas identified by the state or BOEM would be possible to lease because of the military activities that are happening there. That took about a year to go through discussions with Department of Defense. And in September of this year, the state and BOEM issued wind energy areas. They identified three wind energy areas in the call, one in the north called Humboldt, one Morro Bay, the one that Eric showed on the map, and the third one is called Diablo Canyon further south. The call is open from September 19th through January 27th. It's the first step in the process. Everybody is encouraged to submit comments to the call. I can provide the link to the actual call. It's published in the Federal Register. And part of the communications plan that, assuming the CBA is approved, is going to be Castle Wind assisting and discussing with the members of the city how best to respond to the comments, how best to respond to the call. Why is that important? Bureau of Ocean Energy Management has a discretion to take inputs from the public and anybody else for that matter and structure the auction either on pure financial basis or on what's known as multi-factor basis. Multi-factor basis take into consideration non-monetary values. where a bidder can provide just money, the non-monetary values can provide other benefits. Today, up till all the auctions that took place on the East Coast, they were effectively structured on a financial basis only. The Massachusetts auction that is going to be taking place on the 13th of December, just in a few weeks, in its proposed sale notice included a certain amount of non-monetary value to a community benefits agreement, which was later removed. And in the final sale notice, there were no value given to a community input. It is Castle Wind's opinion that community voice should be heard, but it's going to take the people like the city, like others, to express that statement to the Bureau of Ocean Energy Management so that they take those inputs into consideration. At the end of the day, if the federal government chooses the highest bidder, that would be your neighbor for the next 25, 30 years. Or if the voice is heard from the people, then the people effectively have an input in who will be your neighbor for the next 25, 30 years. After the comments are provided to Bureau of Ocean Energy Management, then BOEM expresses or makes a statement that they're going to conduct environmental assessment. That environmental assessment, which is a desktop study, is going to take 4 to 6 months. And after the environmental assessment, which will be also open for public comments, they will issue a preliminary sale or proposed sale notice, also will be open for comments, and then finally the final sale notice. That process can take anywhere between 12 to 18 months. Whether it's going to take 4 or 6 months to do EA, we do not know. Hopefully we'll hear it. BOEM is going to be conducting a public session in St. Louis Obispo on the 13th of December, and I would encourage as many people as possible to come there. That is the time to ask questions. That is the time to hear what BOEM process is going to have to be. After the auction occurs, we're then looking at approximately 5 to 7 years for the permitting process. That includes development of the site assessment plan, conducting of the site assessment actual work, and collecting the baseload, the baseline data. That would be followed by construction operation plan and culminates in the environmental assessment. The environmental assessment itself has to be written by Bureau of Ocean Energy Management. We provide the data, or the developer provides the data collected through the site assessment and other design elements, but the actual physical write-up has to be done by the federal government. And at the end of that, if everything works out, then the Bureau of Ocean Energy Management would issue permits that are consolidated altogether that would allow a developer to start construction, and that would be followed by operation. So it's a lengthy process. It has a lot of points in it where public comments can be included, and not just public, it's everybody's comments for that matter. So that's kind of what it will take to do. And where we are in this whole process at basically step number one. It's no longer zero, it's number one. I will be more than happy to answer any questions you may have.
Okay, questions? Marlis, you want to start off?
Sure. And I do have to apologize. I missed a closed session where much of this was discussed by the council, so I may have more questions. And I apologize for that. It was because the meeting was scheduled after I'd already made travel plans that I couldn't change. So if I have to ask more questions that perhaps have been answered by the council, I hope you'll forgive me. First of all, I was just curious to know if the CBA that you brought to us in August of 2017, did that also include this outfall lease agreement?
It did include the outfall lease agreement. It did not include a payment for the exclusive option.
Okay.
So it's only an option. It's not a lease. We're not negotiating the lease. So the first agreement did not include the payment for the option. This one does.
Okay. And what would happen with that option if Castle Wind does not win the BOEM lease?
Castle Wind would be able to sell the option to the bidder that won the lease. And that sale would include a requirement that the winner abides by all the other conditions of the CBA. Anything that we make above the $250,000, which is the cost of the option, is then split equally 50-50 with the city.
And who would negotiate that? Would that be Castle Wind, or would the city participate in that?
The city will participate. The intent of the CBA is to be mutual agreement. You know, it's not like Castle Wind acts on its own. We do it jointly.
Okay. And are you committed to working through this entire process? Is that
absolutely. Absolutely.
Glad to hear that. I think those were my main questions. I may have some later, but.
All right. Thanks, Marlis. John?
And having been involved intimately with this from almost the outset, I just have a couple of pointed questions based upon constituents asking questions. Joe, one quick question that I would ask is, if we entered into this agreement, given the exclusivity as identified in the agreement, what restrictions are there that are placed on any of the council members with regard to speaking to other entities that may potentially bid on the lease site? And if there are not restrictions to speak, are there restrictions as to what can be discussed?
If you're asked questions by other potential bidders about the city's interests and that kind of thing, there's nothing in here that restricts that. What you would want to be careful of is that you don't begin to create some kind of a record that makes it look like you're going to go with someone else and not with Castle, because Castle has the right to expect you to be dealing with them in good faith. Could I just make one correction in the record? There was a Ms. Meinstein made a comment about the 50-50 split starts after $250,000. That was at one time being considered, but the parties didn't end up agreeing that it's 50-50 from zero.
And in the event that Castle Wind does not, or Trident does not get the lease from BOEM, does that automatically terminate this agreement?
No, because they retain the right to be able to transfer or sell that option to that other party, which is what you get 50% of that value.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
Matt?
Joe, I'll just put this question out there, and then Eric, Joe, you could answer it. What would cause, is there anything to cause Morro Bay to have to pay this money back?
No.
Okay. And then John kind of touched on it, but there's no strict, and as I was talking about in terms of the time with this process, is there any time requirement for this? Is it just forever until the process ends, or?
There are certain milestones that have to be met certain time periods.
Mm-hmm.
And if they aren't met, then the agreement wouldn't be effective.
And then we as the council, future councils, will be revisiting those milestones as they come up?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you. That's all my questions.
And also remember that, as Ms. Weinstein said, what's happening through this agreement is there's an option to basically negotiate for a lease. You're not committed to entering into a lease. You're committed to acting in good faith to see if you can't negotiate a lease, but if you can't come to terms, then you don't have to come to terms on that lease.
Right.
Red?
Mm-hmm. Thank you for coming again, Ala. You spend a lot of time here, and I appreciate that. If the lease option is sold to another entity, then that is an option for that entity to negotiate with the city. The city is not obligated to make an agreement,
right?
Simply to negotiate. Right.
All that's happening with them selling their right that they have under this agreement,
yep,
which is just to negotiate.
Yep. Okay. Thanks.
Okay. I don't have any questions at this time. Those are minor comments. I'll thank you. You have a follow-up question?
I do have just one. Are there any downside risks to our basically making this choice to go with Castle Winds versus exploring other options?
Boy, that's a really broad question.
Yeah, I know it is. You can all try to answer it.
I don't see any legal downside, any legal downside risks to the city entering into this. And from a policy perspective, I think it's been vetted, and it seems very reasonable to enter into this agreement.
And the city retains possession of the outfall.
Possession of the outfall with no commitment to leasing it to anybody, including Castle Wind.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks, that. Thank you, Ala. Was there any follow-up comments from you?
I guess the only follow-up comments is it's been a pleasure working with all of you. It really has been. And I look forward to continue working with all of you and to bring the project to the city's benefit and to everybody's benefit for that matter.
Okay, great.
Thank you.
Thanks, Ala. Okay. And with that, so now we can get back into discussion and deliberations. And John, you want to start us off on that?
Great. Thank you, Eric. Appreciate the information. Joe, thank you. And Ala, as always, thank you for being here and being available for questions and presenting. We, as a council, have been looking at the possibility, feasibility of wind farm off of the shores of Morro Bay for a number of years, and the council, in its wisdom, decided to form a subcommittee. And we, the mayor and I, have spent significant hours with Ms. Weinstein, her staff, a number of other entities, and we also serve on the BOEM interagency, the federal interagency for the evaluation of the lease and potential call for the lease off the shores of Morro Bay. So this has been something that's been in the works and continues to be in the works for at least 3+ years. In my association and discussion with other entities that have at least come forward that are developers of wind operations, versus Castle Wind, it's my personal opinion that Castle Wind not only has been the entity that has forged the way or created this opportunity, but also leads with regard to technological expertise and knowledge in the field. And Ms. Weinstein and her group have spent countless hours working to not only inform the community, but involve the community, forge relationships, create relationships, not only with staff, but with many different disciplines in the community, including our fishermen. And that, we know, is very important because this could have significant impacts on our fishing industry. And she and her group have spent much time working together with our fishermen to forge an agreement that has, in my opinion, been or will be very beneficial to mitigating some of the issues associated with this potentially to the fishing industry. And at least from what I've heard, has been received very positively from our fishing organization and fishermen. That has been very important to us. In addition, we originally looked at this as an exclusive agreement a year and a half ago or so, opted not to go with it because I think it was very early in the process and we weren't quite sure what we were dealing with. It's evolved tremendously. I think now is the time to move forward with a collaborative agreement with Castle Wind. For all of the reasons that I've outlined, I believe they potentially would be the best partner for us as a city. They are particularly concerned with educating our community with regard to not only process, but with this project as a whole. And I'm convinced that there are significant benefits, not only in from the industry standpoint that I talked about, but to our community in terms of gaining knowledge and gaining a good partner in us working together as a council to move this initiative forward. It economically can be very beneficial to Morro Bay. Long term, the opportunities are great. It's the right thing to do from an energy standpoint and from our state standards that have been set with regard to green energy. And so for all of those reasons, and for reasons I think of moving the initiative forward to a positive conclusion, I highly support the approval of the community benefit agreement with Castle Wind. And with that, I'll leave it to you, Mayor, to add your comments as a subcommittee member.
I'll wait till last. Thank you. And I'll, Marlos, if you want to go ahead, we'll go through. Thank you. Yeah. Thanks, John.
Well, I want to just echo the comments that John just made. I think we have all been extremely impressed with the diligence of ALA and Trident Winds and bringing on the folks from ENBC. Is that correct? Yeah, thank you. That was a big, big helpful move, and I fully support the community benefits agreement. I think it's the right thing to do at the right time, and I think we as a council need to do whatever we can to assist in the current process and to try to make the point that it is important that the community supports the people that are going to come into your community and operate such a large facility as this. And I appreciate your comments that, you know, we're going to be neighbors for 20 years, and we would like to know that we know who those people are and that they appreciate us and understand us. So I really am grateful for all the time you've put in and the way you've educated and held public forums, and it's been very impressive. So thank you. I support it.
Thanks. Matt?
Yes, first I'd like to say I do also support this CBA with Castle Wind, and I'd like to also thank Ala for all the work that you've done, all the outreach. I think it's so with that said, that's a very easy decision. But then long-term wise, and I think the irony of Morro Bay and how much we were started in this city 40, 45, 50 years ago with our PG&E plant and the water intake in the bay, and now working with a wind farm in terms of social responsibility, of environmental responsibility, I think it's a wonderful timing. And I think given all the various subplots that could develop in time, because I agree with you all of this is going to be some time, but it's incredibly optimistic on the upswing, looking at it in terms of jobs, environmentally, in terms of Morro Bay having a power plant again, or being the center of power. I think it's wonderful. And then that can benefit, as you say, Marlis, in terms of the second stage, third stage, in terms of jobs, new industry here in town. I think the work with the Fishermen's Association, I think in terms of their reality throughout the years in terms of the other cable, the cable fisheries, I think this is a wonderful transition, and I look forward to this developing.
Thanks, Matt. Red?
When Ala first came to town, I was suspicious of her promises. One, because she was promising economic benefits, which were not specified. And then two, she had not talked to the fishermen's community. And she has rectified all of that. Council asked for an economic study, and she performed that, and we saw some numbers. And Ala went to a great deal of trouble and time to negotiate with the fishermen, because every time she tried to meet with them, they were out to sea.
Fishing,
yes. So I am impressed also that Ala has brought on board Stephen Black, who is here in the audience. He brings a great deal of energy expertise. And I was impressed that Holger Grubel of ENBW flew here from Germany to sign the agreement with the CFO, and he had some tuna at the at our Harbor Festival, and then he flew back to Germany. So Ala has done everything that we have asked her to do, and she has done it proactively. A couple of other energy companies have come to town and have really said nothing to me that of any substance. So I fully support the CBA.
All right. Thanks, Red. Not to get too long into this because we've really covered it all, but thanks, Ala. And I think back at really it started some time ago when with the memorandum of cooperation. But there was some question at the time. Eric Markell was involved at that point, and there was even discussion of wave energy at the time. And then it evolved, and then Ala came on board, and then it took the next step. But the memorandum of cooperation really laid a foundation. I mean, anyone can come in and say, hey, we want to work with you, and that's what we'll do. And you can stay true to your word. I think the memorandum of cooperation said, yes, we will do that, but it put it in writing, and we both agreed to it, we being Trident and the city. And I think that was a great foundation to remind two entities, this is what we cooperated. There was nothing binding about it. It just said, we're willing to cooperate together. And that started it all off. And then there was no other entity that had really explored what wind energy would be off our coast. It was just Trident at that time. And then as things evolved, it drew more interest. Obviously, we do have other interests with other entities that are also going to be, I assume, bidding on this. But every step of the way, when we first talked about back in August, when we were looking at an MOU at that time, an exclusive agreement, we weren't ready for that. We wanted more information, and we wanted to have some backing with our fishermen. Ala, you've done that, and every step of the way, we've had that that cooperation and working towards the agreement that that's before us tonight. So I've got great faith in the arrangement. There's still more work to be done, but I would just say thanks to staff and John as well, and all of council who have, you know, the subcommittee has been afforded to meet with Ala per the Brown Act, but Ala's still work has met individually with council members to keep everybody informed. But it's been a great process, and including the extra process that presenting information to the community, the economic development impact report, Red, that you mentioned. Those are things that were just great to get through. So with that, I'm fully supportive of this. And unless there's any other comments, I would go ahead and take a motion. John?
Yes, I would move that we approve the community benefit agreement between the City of Morro Bay and Castle Wind, LLC, and authorize rescission of Memorandum of Cooperation with Trident Winds, LLC.
Second. And motion by Mr. Heading, second by Mr. Irons. And with that, any further discussion? None. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? None. Motion carries 5-0. Congratulations.
Just one reminder, Ala mentioned it, the BOEM meeting will be in San Luis Obispo. This is for the community that's maybe watching out there. Our screen is blank, but it's on the 13th of December at the County Chambers in San Luis Obispo from 5 to 8 p.m. The BOEM individuals will be there. Most of the task force members will be there, and that will be a chance to give input and have your questions answered regarding that process and where they are with the process and where it's going from here. Great. 12-13, December 13th, 5 to 8 p.m., San Luis Obispo County Chambers.
Thanks, John. And with that concludes what's on our public agenda at this time. And we are going to be one more. Oh, excuse me. We have item number five. Thank you. Item number five. Thank you. I'll look to our city manager to get us going on that. Thanks. Not so fast.
Maybe you know something.
Not
I don't
so
know.
Not so fast.
Yeah. All right. This is the last item five for the night, discussion and direction regarding verification tabulation of all purported Proposition 218 written protests related to the 2018 WRF water and sewer surcharge. The recommendation before you is to direct staff to verify and tabulate the 2,163 purported written protests and 5 written protests to withdraw the written request to withdraw a protest received prior to the closing of the September 11, 2018 Prop 218 public hearing using all criteria established by Resolution 4418, and additionally verify and tabulate the purported 1,000 written protests submitted during the public comment period of September 11, 2018 Proposition 218 public hearing using all criteria established by Resolution 44-18 with the exception of the date requirement. To give a little bit of background, and I know council will probably have some questions and discussion, so I'll try to be quick, but want to cover some bases here. On June 13, 2018, council adopted Resolution 4418, which I just mentioned in the recommendation language, which provided, in our opinion, very important because we're getting a lot of questions about what was to be expected and submitting protests, that the city attorney brought forward a resolution to create guidelines that were based on what was recommended by the California League of Cities regarding submission and tabulation of protests connected to a 218 process. The intent of the resolution was to ensure all utility customers and property owners, as well as general public, were well aware of the process prior to it being initiated. As stated in the resolution, there are several key components that must be included in the written protest. One, that's a statement that there is a protest to the proposed rates that are subject to the hearing. Subject of the hearing, that the name of record of the owner or customer of record is included, identifying the parcel served by the city that would be subject to the proposed rate increase, an original signature of the record of owner or customer of record with respect to the parcel identified, and to be sure that all pertinent information is provided and considered prior to a protest being filed, no protest shall be signed before the city has issued the formal notice that commences the 45-day protest period. And finally, a certification affirming that contents of the protest are true and correct. At the September 11th, 2018 meeting, council approved the wharf surcharges of $41 per month for the typical single-family home. Of course, there was a lower rate for multifamily and a completely different set for businesses or commercial use, which were to go into effect July 2019, and adopted Resolution 71-18, which is attached to the report. That followed the requisite 218 public hearing notice of 45 days, and as council is well aware, we actually had longer than 45 days for most folks who were affected, could be affected by the increase. We mailed notices to all owners of record to their address of record in the county data, and all affected Morro Bay water and sewer ratepayers who were not property owners, which is, council is aware, well above and beyond what is required by Proposition 218. The city received in return 2,163 protests and 5 written requests to withdraw protests during the public hearing that led to the September 11th meeting. The city needed to receive 2,794 or more written protests, which is equals to the 50% plus one of the total eligible parcels in Morro Bay. What we mean by total eligible parcels are those parcels that would be affected by the increase. In other words, that our water or sewer customers or both. Needed that number to trigger a legally required validation process. Since there was an insufficient number of protests received by council, they were able to move forward with the rate increase. Per Proposition 218, no matter how many protests are submitted by an individual parcel, only one protest counts towards the 50 plus one. And as council is also aware, during that same hearing, under public comment, a member of the public submitted a bundle of purported 1,000 written protests and stated that they were collected prior to the convening of the 218 process, our public notice period, and most were not dated. Through Resolution 4418, as I mentioned before, council established clear and reasonable requirements to govern the 218 process, again guided by California League of Cities, in complete conformance with the Constitution of the State of California, And chief among one of those requirements is what written protests contain pertinent information, including the date, of which coincided with the public notice period. And that's important because submitting a protest during the 218 public hearing process with a valid date, it is more likely that individuals submitting the protest had the information necessary to make an informed decision. Most importantly, what the actual rate increase amount was being proposed. And compared to an individual submitting a protest before they know what the rate increase amount had been that had been established. So those purported 1,000 written protests submitted by the constituent were collected prior to the convening of the process. And at that meeting, council determined they were not valid protests and therefore were not to be counted pursuant to subdivision 4D of resolution 4418. And since there wasn't a sufficient number of protests included in that tally to be counted to determine whether a protest may prevent the surcharges from being imposed, resolution was adopted, 71-18, approving the surcharges. Staff has since confirmed the bundle of those purported 1,000 written protests. They did not have dates or had dates that did not correspond with the 218 public hearing period. So following the September 11th meeting, the city has received several public records requests related to the process, as well as questions about the kind of quote-unquote true non-duplicative number of protests submitted. You know, council's grappled with this during the meeting and subsequently. Staff has not attempted to validate the 2,163 protests and the five requests to overturn their own protests. However, in response to a public records request regarding those written protests and during a cursory review of them, the city identified over 170 of the 2,163 protests had missing information that is required by Resolution 4418. And thus, those would not be valid. In conducting the review of those protests, staff also observed that there are likely a significant number of duplicates. That is, they're valid, but there are multiple protests for one single parcel, and only one of those would count ultimately. And we believe those duplicates are likely the result of parcel owners and ratepayers receiving numerous flyers and mailers prior to and during the 218 process, requesting that they submit protests, as well as the city's own 218 notices and related mailers to help inform ratepayers about the wharf project, as well as the rate increase. So at this time, we don't know what the total number of duplicates are, but they expect there to be quite a number of them. And as the question of the number of valid protests remains unanswered during the November 27, 2018 council meeting just a few days ago, under future agenda discussion, City Council by consensus directed staff to bring back an item for discussion. That is what we're hearing tonight. And Council made it clear during the November 27th meeting that the 218 process is complete as of September 11, 2018. With the adoption of Resolution 71-18, the rate increase will move forward. And what is being requested is simply a look at the number of valid protests within the 2163, and then looking at the other set of purported protests simply for the value of understanding, had they submitted them under the proper protocol, under the proper requirements for Resolution 4418, how many of them would have counted. So what we're proposing is to conduct a review and verification, account and verification of 2,163 written protests and five written requests to withdraw protests to determine the actual number of valid non-duplicative protests. And in addition, staff recommends that council direct staff to review the 1,000 uncounted protests to determine how many would have been valid had they been submitted with a date that conformed with Resolution 4418, and whether any are duplicative of the protests as to the parcels to which they relate. We're proposing initiating this process on December 17th, 2018. We have a lot of work to do prior to that and want to make sure we do it well and precisely. And then we recommend inviting two members of the community to observe this process in its entirety. If more than two community members express interest to review the account or observe it, then those names would be placed in a container from which the police chief would pick two nominees. That entire process is suggested to solidify the city's commitment to transparency in all matters, while also providing a smooth and efficient review process. Following the completion of the process, we would recommend just preparing a report that would be made available to the public and City Council via city website.
Great staff report. Thank you. Okay, so we've taken public comment at the beginning of this meeting, so we'll get into any questions. But as a way of background, thanks for that. We, following the meeting, there was a motion to go ahead and do the count. It failed 3-2. At that point, process-wise, it's not the two no votes don't have the ability to reconsider. That would have to be done by the yes votes. And then, of course, we did get to a future agenda item, which Councilmember Heading agendized, and that went that future agenda went unanimously, which brought us here. And with that, maybe Councilmember Heading can tee up any other comments on this before we go into questions, and then we'll start on questions.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'll just generally make the comment that I initially was opposed to this. During my campaigning venture, I talked to a significant number of constituents in the community, both pro the process as it was and a number, many, that were against, and including my counterpart in who was also running for mayor, and I have chatted since the results of the election have been known. And one of the things that we feel is important for the community is to begin a process of healing as much as possible. And it became apparent to me that for transparency's sake, that the acknowledgement, not from a legal standpoint, that the 1,000 or so ballots that were presented were valid, but from the standpoint of acknowledging and counting those to determine their validity with regard to what possibly would have been the outcome if they had been considered at that time, was important for the community to begin a process of healing. With that, I brought forward under future agenda items, this as an agenda item. Appreciate the unanimous support for that, and also appreciate the staff report that's here. It does capture exactly what my intent was in bringing it forward. And with that, those are my opening comments. Thank you.
Okay, so let's start with questions, if there are any questions at this point, and then we'll get into deliberation. Marlos?
Sure. Yeah, I just have a few questions. I just, first of all, want to just ask if when you use the terms verify and tabulate, you are essentially meaning validating. So verify is you're looking to see if the information is all there and if they have followed the process. Is that what you mean by verify? And you're trying to identify valid protests. Is that correct? And count them.
Being an attorney, wording is very important to me.
Okay.
And I specifically used the word verify because I didn't want to use the word validate because the process is completed. There's nothing left to validate. All we're doing is checking the documents to see whether they would have met some requirement.
Okay. But we are doing the looking for duplications. We're looking for.
But we're making sure they all comply with Resolution 4418,
right,
except for the 1,000 don't have to have a date.
Right. Okay. And is it true? And I just want to ask you this, Joe, that the law establishing the 218 process actually states in it that it is in response to a proposed rate increase.
Absolutely.
Right. So, that's by definition, you have to have a proposed rate increase.
Yeah, you have to be protesting something.
Right. Okay. Okay. And just approximately how long do you think this process might take?
We're looking at one of our staff members who will be, I'm not going to put him on the spot. We're recommending or thinking about is doing, you know, part of her half days for a week or two, whatever, however long it takes to do it well. And again, two members of the public who are willing to volunteer their time to be observers. And I think we have a few takers already, which is great. It could take a week or two.
All right. Yeah. Thank you. Thanks.
All right. And I have no questions.
Okay. Matt?
Scott, your comment there makes me think in terms of tabulating these and verifying them, in turn, how would that be brought back to display?
Sure. Since there would be no action to take from council side, we're just recommending issuing a report. As the city attorney mentioned, the 218 process was complete. The decision was made on solid legal grounds to move forward with the rate increase. So our feeling is this would just be a report that would be provided to the public and city council via either email transmittal and or website posting.
So not necessarily at a meeting? Unless
council could direct it to come back, but again, there's no action that would be required to be taken since you've already made your decision on the...
Okay. All right. Thanks. That's all my questions.
Thank you. Red?
Yeah, Mr. Mayor, you prefaced this saying something about people who voted before and how they voted, and I didn't understand that.
I'm sorry. I at the very beginning?
Just at the beginning of the
when
of
we
the
initially
questions.
Your comments.
Yeah, initially at the September 11th meeting, Ms. McPherson made a motion to, and I think this is a good point to make, because I think the motion was to tabulate and verify the votes, not validate, but verify for information only. And at that time, for that motion, it failed 3-2. Mm-hmm. Myself and Ms. McPherson voted in favor for that, and then the rest of council, of course, voted no. So that failed at that point to go through the process of verifying the ballots for information only.
Yep.
Does that help?
But you followed up by saying something about changing our votes now?
I that was just for information only. And because at that point, as no votes, we didn't have the ability to ask to reconsider that. And maybe that's just a formality. Joe could probably get into the details of that process. If we wanted to reconsider that vote, that would have had to been brought up by one of the yes votes, but that didn't matter because Councilmember Heading said, "Hey, I want to do a future agenda item," which we all agreed to. Okay.
Okay.
Sorry about that.
That's quite all right. It's taking me a long time to sometimes follow it. Okay. I have no questions.
All right. Thanks. I don't have any questions either. That discussion kind of covered some of it. Was there any other questions? John, you want to start us off for deliberation then?
Yeah, absolutely. Obviously, I support the staff report. Number one, thank you for a very concise and complete report and a very succinct recommendation that I know Joe looked over and assisted with language in terms of wordsmithing, and so well done. I want to just make one general comment about public comment that was made this evening, and that was that there be further consideration in terms of this count, or what I'll say, this verification process of the, I'll call it 1,000 ballots that were brought forward during the September 11th hearing, that they be included in the verification and validation process. In other words, that number become the denominator, and we more or less, in my interpretation, reopen the hearing, which I'm assuming we'd have to do from a process standpoint, and go through that again and consider it. And let me tell you why I'm adamantly opposed to it. When you look at the law, as Councilmember McPherson stated with regard to 218, it says that you have the right to protest
And the words are, in response to a proposed rate increase. From a democratic process standpoint, the very foundation of democracy, to me, is voting with complete information and knowledge. And if I were to sanction a process that was based upon the complete absence of absolute knowledge regarding this 218 process, to me, it would tear down the democratic process. And so for that, I could not be part of that, nor would I support that. That being said, I do think it important for us to, as a council, review the remaining, I'll call it the 1,000 or so, as stated in staff report, invalid protests as determined at the hearing, so that we have information to understand how many may have been appropriate. I'll just use the word appropriate. That's legally okay. So I support the staff report, but wanted to get that out because there was public comment tonight about further, that had further implications that I'm opposed to. So thank you.
All right. Thanks. Marlos?
Well, obviously, I support the staff recommendation. I strongly felt we needed to do this just to be able to tell the community how many, again, I'll say households, because it's a parcel and duplications don't count, but how many actually fit the definition. I also agree that we were very clear that it has to be in response to a proposed rate increase, so we cannot count the 1,000. But I knew that there would be questions about how many of those were also in the 2,100 and whatever. And that's what we want to know, and we want to be able to report. And it's just the right thing to do so we can be transparent about how many people actually oppose the rate increase. So that's, I support it. Have all along.
Thank you. Matt?
When we held our previous vote that was voted down to do this, I think that we've gone above and beyond in terms of the council, in terms of expressing what needs to be done. And then we had a number of votes, and I think we had a lot of votes that were those the mysterious 1,000 votes. And at first, when we at September 11th, I voted, I thought, you know, no, we've gone through this process. We don't need to. But however, Marlis, I understood your point then, and even now in terms of looking at this and tabulating them and being able to speak to get that closure. I think we do have the closure myself. I think the people have spoken, and it wasn't loud enough for the no vote. But however, with this, if we need this closure, if it is going to be that healing that John, you, and Mr. Weiss talked about, and Marlis, I understand your point clearly. I would be willing to do this, especially as Scott, as you explain the process going forward with it. Okay.
Thanks, Matt. Red?
Yes, I support staff recommendation.
Thanks, Red. I do as well, and glad to bring this back. And in some ways, it's actually better to bring it back the way we are. This staff report really does tell a good story, and I think that's what's important, because we had 2,163 protest ballots. That's what we had for the proposed Prop 218 rate increase. That we know, the 1,000 that were submitted didn't have a rate to really know what they were protesting. So we are going to honor that there were people out there that it was submitted. We didn't acknowledge that those were valid or part of the process. But with this, as I understand it, we'll go ahead and go through a verification, and we'll have a number that is distilled down to, it'll eliminate all the duplications and such. So we'll have that number in a report. So I appreciate that and support it. And with that, should we have a motion?
I would move approval of the staff report as presented.
The recommendations in the staff report?
Yes.
All right. I'll second that.
So we have a motion by Mr. Heading, second by Ms. McPherson. Staff recommendations as listed in the staff recommendation for the staff report. Any further discussion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? None. Motion carries 5-0. At that point, we are done with the agenda. And before we take a recess, are there any closing remarks or announcements at this point?
Why, yes, Mr. Mayor. As a matter of fact, I do have a remark. Amgen Tour of California is going to officially announce host cities for the 2019 Amgen Tour of California next Wednesday at 8 a.m. at Estero Inn, 501 Embarcadero in Morro Bay. So everyone is welcome to show up at 8 a.m. for the announcement. And after a few brief remarks by the mayor and myself and I think Charlie Yates, breakfast will be served by Buttercup Bakery on the patio of the Estero Inn.
Wow, don't miss that.
And if you would like to participate as a bicyclist, please join me at about 7:30 in the parking lot between the Anderson Inn and the Hofbräu, and we will gather and wear cycling gear or not. Well, wear something, please. And at about 7:50, we will ride as a group from the Anderson Inn a full 0.3 mile to the Estero Inn, where I'm sure we will be widely photographed for TV, and and then we'll do the announcements and have a nice breakfast.
Wow, nicely done, Red. Any closing remarks?
Oh, well, I'm just going to say, you know, I know we will have an official transfer of power at our December 11th meeting, but I just want to thank Mayor Irons. This was your last council meeting that you were chairing as mayor. Thank you.
We have a special meeting.
Thank
too.
Yeah. Oh, I know, but the closed session
all
hardly
right.
counts.
Oh, okay.
But anyway, thank right. you for it. Everything you've done. I just want to say that publicly.
Thanks, Marlis. Thank you.
Great job.
And with that, can we go to recess then? We take a short recess and we'll come right back here for closed session.
Announce here what it's for.
Pardon me?
Announce now what it's for.
Okay. Thank you. Thanks, Joe. So the closed session items, we have two items for closed session, CS1. So conference with legal counsel, anticipated litigation. This is significant exposure to litigation pursuant to the paragraph 2 of subdivision D of section 54956.9, and this is one matter. And then CS2, this is the second item for closed session, is conference with legal counsel, anticipated litigation pursuant to paragraph 4 of subdivision D of section 54956.9, and this is also one matter.
And it's going to occur at?
And it's going to occur at 595 Harbor Street at City Hall. And time on that, that'll be following our recess when we get there. Okay. All right. So we'll reconvene to 595 Harbor Street for closed session. All right. Got all that. Thank you. We'll be right back. Thanks.